Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on What If, when we come back. In Job 38, verse 24, we read a scientific question. It says, "By what way is it that the light is parted?" Or paraphrased, it would say, "By what way or technique is the light apportioned or separated?" Now, imagine asking that question 4,000 years ago. It is, of course, a simple question to answer today. And the answer is by passing it through the prism of a spectroscope. But who could have known that 4,000 years ago, back in Job's day? Now, when we heat a metal red hot, or we heat any substance until it's incandescent, it gives forth light rays. These rays, after passing through the spectroscope, divide themselves on a graph according to the content of the matter that sent them forth. So when a ray of light reaches us from some far-flung star, all we have to do is pass the light ray through the spectroscope to see what the composition of the star is and the proportion of each of its ingredients. This division of light rays is always constant. It doesn't vary. And we can always rely upon the results. Spectrographic or spectroscopic analysis is an exact science. And this is the manner by which the light is parted. So this places you and I in a quandary. Either Job knew this, or there is a supernatural wisdom being revealed here. And that's just one more of the many examples of science in the Scripture. And it's one more of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School that we conduct here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package first. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, and it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free, so you can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email. Send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. We've been talking about what if. What if is a part of American language. It's a part of the way we speak and we conduct our lives. We're constantly using that term. It's what if. What if President Bush does this and such? What if the Congress does so and so? What if the stock market goes down? What if, what if, what if? Generally, we apply these what ifs to past tense events. What if Adolf Hitler had not attacked Russia? How would the war have come out? If Hitler hadn't let the British escape from Dunkirk in 1940, how would that have affected the war? If the Japanese had not attacked Pearl Harbor, how would that have affected the war? These are what we call the what-if questions. I've been applying that to the news lately. I pointed out to you last time when we were closing that Orrin Hatch is sponsoring or proposing legislation that's based upon a concept of sedition. Now, there's an effort afoot here in our Congress, an effort now to connect rejection of this new American way, this new American form of policy or government with a form of sedition by refusal and asset confiscation. If you don't toe the line, we're going to take all of your toys away from you. If you oppose our president, if you oppose our present corporate fascist government, or worse yet, if you've spoken out against it, you are to be destroyed. You cannot expose the truth about our tyrannical government. There was a woman down in Texas, actually she's from California, and her son was killed over in Iraq. And she's an anti-war activist. I don't remember her name exactly, but she went down to George Bush's ranch in Texas. And she got quite a following. She got quite a bit of attention. And she wanted to interview the president. She's concerned about her son's death, and she wanted to ask the president some questions, and he didn't want to answer. And so instead of saying, "Look, lady, I don't want to talk to you," he didn't say, "Lady, I'm not going to talk to you. I don't want to talk to you. Get out of my face. Get out of my life." Instead, he avoided her. Well, the woman showed up in Washington at the State of the Union address, and she was wearing a T-shirt. Wearing a T-shirt. And she was arrested in the Capitol and jailed. No, so don't sit there and say, you know, "Well, what if this woman hadn't opposed the president? What if this woman just shut up, like thousands of other American mothers, and don't ask questions? Don't demand answers. Just sit on the back of the bus, fold your hands, and enjoy the view." You see, if you are vociferous and you get out there and you speak out, it'll get you arrested. And there's lots of examples of that beginning to happen now in America. You see, now since publications can be declared in violation of the newly or recently strengthened 432 new statutes of the National Security Act by the Attorney General. So the Attorney General now has 432 statutes now at his disposal that he can use against you if you speak out. And as a newsletter writer, Al Martin, once said, or recently said, "We may only be able to flee to Russia or China, where expatriated Americans and their private assets are absolutely guaranteed." What a renvoi. You know, people used to flee to the United States of America. America is full of political prisoners, or people who had fled Vietnam, or fled China, fled Russia, fled Poland, fled Germany, to come to America for political protection. Now we see the opposite. Now Americans are fleeing to Russia, fleeing to China, to protect their assets, to protect themselves from being arrested or jailed. This woman, I forgot her name, she would probably be better received in China or Russia than she's being received in Washington, D.C., and she's an American taxpayer. You see, dissent now in America isn't going to be tolerated any longer. Dissent used to be a strength of America, but not in a corporate fascist welfare state, not in a communist country. Well, they can never be reclaimed, recalled, encumbered, or anything else by the upcoming Bush dictatorship, which would attempt to use the Patriot Acts in some sort of extension of a conveyance clause back of any asset of an expatriate. So if you run away, we're putting laws on the books under our treaties with other countries, tax treaties with other countries, to harass those people. And to bring them back to the United States, and to take their property away from them. Those are acts that we used to think were done in Nazi Germany and Stalinist Russia and Mao's China. Now we find it going on in America. Not on the scale that we saw back during the Cold War years. It hasn't reached that yet, but then, you know, Hitler had to start somewhere. You know, the first day, he only arrested 3 or 4 people. And then as the days wore on, as I showed you a little earlier over here, this lady's getting on an airplane out in Denver. She's an old lady. She's 83 years old. She's just a walking stiff. She's just about ready to die. She's had cancer, breast surgery. She's had hip replacement. And she had another thing over here. She's suffering from dementia caused by stroke. She had a stroke. I mean, they hold her out of line, and they started to search her over here, and this lady can't even walk, for crying out loud. She's doing the best she can to stand up over here, and she's got this young girl over here just raising hell with her and her daughter because she might have a bomb in her depends. Now, that's not insanity. No, that's policy. That's not an aberration. That isn't something that a clerk in a Walmart store does, and then the Walmart manager comes over and fires her. That goes on day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year. I could go back for several years and show you dozens of articles, just like this one here. In fact, I mentioned this, they come in every day. I don't even read them anymore. That's how many times that happens. So it isn't something that's new. It's a concerted effort to drive patronage, to drive customers away from American Airlines, United Airlines, Delta Airlines, drive them away so you won't fly. So the airlines will go bankrupt and the government will come in and take them all over. And we'll have one American airline, and the American National Airline. It'll be like Aeroflot in Russia. And that's the objective. And it works like a shot. And you don't know that, and I don't know that. We can't prove that. We don't know that that's their policy. But, you know, you don't have to be too smart. You can just watch this going on. You know as well as I do that if this went on at Walmart, if they treated you people at Walmart the way they treat you in the airport, would you go back to Walmart? And then if you get tired of this and you speak out against it, you'd be like this woman. Her name was Cindy something or other. I remember that name. Cindy's coming back to me now. Waltham or Walheim or something like that from California. You know, you get out here and start wearing T-shirts, you know, pretty soon they start arresting you. It's just getting started here in America. We've been through this. The world's been through this. Freedom isn't something that's endemic to the world or natural or normal. Tyranny is natural and normal. Freedom and liberty is abnormal. It's a rare exception. It is an exception that we find mostly in Israelite countries when we obey God and keep His commandments. And then when we get a little uppity, we find out that we go back into national captivity again. We're on the verge of another new national captivity here in Israel. Well, we call it the United States of America. In Old Testament times, they called it Israel. Now, all countries have capitulated to the neocons, that's the new conservatives, except Liechtenstein, which, of course, is now where the elitists keep their ill-gotten gains. As a result, the sophisticated are going to Russia and keeping their assets in a Liechtenstein corporation or trust, whether it's St. Petersburg or Beijing. Wealthy Americans are on the march out of the United States, big time. Wealthy Americans are leaving America. Boys and girls, people back in German times, in 1933, 4, 5, 6, 7, were leaving Germany big time. When tyranny begins, wealth and people with means leave. Remember I mentioned Albert Einstein, he left Germany in 1935. He woke up one day and said, you know, I don't have a great future here. Now, not everybody could leave Germany, but those that could did. And they were called, expatriates and traitors and fifth columnists and etc. Hitler never had a good word for them. Well, we don't either. When American companies leave our shores and go overseas, you know, under this new umbrella we call free trade. What do you think of that? Well, boys and girls, the Stanley Company had to leave the United States. They had to. Here's what's going on. I went into a hardware store, this some years back now, probably 10, 15 years ago, before Stanley left. Stanley Tools, here in America, Stanley is the standard for tools. I mean, Stanley is tools. And anything else is just cheap Chinese or cheap Jap trash. Stanley was the standard. I went into a hardware store and they had 25-foot contractor's measuring tapes for $2. At that time, the Stanley tapes were six. And these tapes were made in China. And they were being sold in the hardware store for one-third what the Stanley company could sell them for. So the Stanley people said, well, we're going to have to move offshore. We're going to have to move to Mexico. I don't know where they moved, but they moved somewhere. Now, we could ask the question, well, what if our government had not pursued this free trade policy? Would we be having outsourcing of our jobs today? Would the Stanley Company have left America and gone to some foreign country? What if we had tariffs? Well, you know, when our founding fathers organized our country and created our Constitution, do you know how we financed our federal government? There was no income tax. There was no OSHA, no EPA. States didn't collect income taxes. The way our federal government was financed was with import and export tariffs. If the French wanted to sell wine in America, they had to pay to do that. If the Chinese wanted to sell something in America, they'd have to pay a tariff. It was done with specificity to protect American manufacturers and American businesses, to protect American wine growers. Today, we've got exactly the opposite mentality. Somebody came along and said, well, what we need to do is to have free trade. And they sold it to us. I mean, they came out and they sold it to us on the radio, the newspaper, and news magazines. The politicians on both sides of the aisle sold us this concept of free trade. Everybody in America is in favor of free trade. I don't know of anybody that's opposed to it. Well, there's a few crazies out here, you know, like me and Bob Chapman and five others. But other than that, everybody's pretty much in favor of it. So I got to ask the question, well, gee, what do you think would happen? What if we hadn't done that? Do you think Stanley would have left if the United States government had said, okay, you Chinese, if you want to sell your tapes in this country for $2, that's fine, but you got to pay a $4 tariff. That way, when somebody goes into the hardware store to buy a tape, it'll be $6 for a Chinese tape, which is cheap trash, or $6 for a Stanley tape, which is the best made tape that money can buy. And there'd be a certain number of people that would actually buy the Chinese tape. And when they did, $2 would go to China and $4 would go to the United States government, and those people would be paying the taxes to support the government. And the people that paid the $6 would be supporting the Stanley Company, which wouldn't be taxed. And neither would the people that bought from the Stanley Company. The people that would be paying the tax are those people who bought the foreign goods. What if we did that today? Do you think there'd be some difference? Do you think we'd have outsourcing of our jobs? Not that outsourcing's all bad. Hey, listen, if you people out there want outsourcing of your jobs and you want free trade worldwide and you want to compete with the Chinese straight up, you know, no skin off my back, don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. I'm just a reporter. I thought I'd report to you some facts that are going on. You know, what if our government, instead of penalizing Americans, actually had tax policy that was aimed at keeping Americans and American assets here in America? Why do Americans want to expatriate and go to Russia or Poland, or Mexico? What would motivate an American to want to leave the United States of America? Well, let me give you a couple of ideas. Down at Lake Chapala, near Guadalajara, Mexico, there is a large American community. And back in the 50s, it was about 30,000 Americans. They all speak English, they all drive American cars, and they're all just, you know, it was like little America is what it boils down to. Like Chinatown, you know, in San Francisco, all the Chinese live there. Well, the Americans all live out here at Lake Chapala, little America. And they could live there for about one-tenth what it cost them to live in the United States. So they would retire, and then they would move down to Lake Chapala. and then they would live down there. I guess they'd learn how to speak Spanish and do their thing. I mean, if you're not trying to make a living in Mexico, Mexico is a great place to live. I've got a guy that I know. He has a television station in Fresno, California, and he lives in Monterrey, Mexico, and he happens to have a house in Monterrey, Mexico. I don't know what his citizenship is at this moment in time. I can't tell you, but he was a Mexican immigrant some years back, and I happened to be on this TV station out in Fresno, and I got to talking with the guy, and he said, I have a house that if I built that house here in Fresno, California, it would cost me $500,000. It cost me $50,000 to build this house in Mexico. My God, a $50,000 house in Monterrey, Mexico, you know, is a pretty spacious place. He says, I have three servants in the house, and it's a big house. And I'm 1,700 miles from my business here in Fresno. And he said, I prefer to live in Mexico because it's a freer country, a freer society than America. I'm talking to a ship builder down in New Orleans some years back. He was from Yugoslavia. And we were chit-chatting just kind of back and forth. And this is, you know, about 1990. I mean, we're talking 15, 20 years ago now. And this guy, he said he traveled on a Yugoslav passport. He was a citizen of Yugoslavia. And that he traveled all over the world. He's a shipbuilder, and he builds ships. He had a shipyard in New Orleans. Now, he doesn't build gigantic ships, but he builds steel ships, you know, 150, 200 feet long, you know, fishing boats, things like that. And then these fishing boats are sold all over the world. And so he travels to Japan. He sells fishing boats in Japan. He sells fishing boats in France. He sells fishing boats in Germany. And he said the reason that he lives in New Orleans and has Yugoslav citizenship and travels on a Yugoslav passport is because he has more freedom behind the Iron Curtain than he has in the United States of America. That's what he told me in 1990. I mean, this is long before George Bush became president. Long before. We're not talking about the Cold War, you know, in the 1950s and talking about Soviet Russia. I asked him, I said, well, do you sell your boats in Russia? He says, yes. And he said, you know, you people, you Americans here, you don't have a good understanding because you don't travel the world like I do as a businessman. And he said, the truth of the matter is, there's less hassle at the border when you're traveling behind the Iron Curtain. This is in 1990. This is just before the Soviet Union broke up. Remember that? So this is under the old regime, the old Soviet Union. He said, you know, you got less problem moving around in behind the Iron Curtain or any place else in the world for that matter than you do in the United States of America. I was pretty shocked. What if instead of having such a repressive society today in America, what if we had a society about like the Yugoslavs had in 1990? I mean, what if our government treated people? Do you think maybe we could get more people to fly on American Airlines? Do you think we could get less or fewer people, fewer Americans, to expatriate? Do you think maybe we could get more people to invest more money in America, in American enterprises? You know, what if? You know, if we changed our policies, we used to have policies that made America the richest, most powerful nation in the world. We were the world's number one lending nation. Now we're no longer the richest. We're no longer the most powerful, at least not economically. Now, I think that militarily, we can say that we're still the most powerful. We spend more money on national defense than every other nation in the world combined. If you take all of the defense spending in Russia, China, England, Germany, France, Indonesia, Mexico, Turkey, I mean, everybody in the world, we Americans spend more money on defense. Hell, I thought the Cold War was over. What do we need all this money spent on defense? What if we took that $400 billion a year, which is what the Russians and the Chinese and everybody else have done, You see, the Russians and the Chinese are sitting over there with their nuclear arsenals, and they're saying, the Americans will not attack us because the Americans know. The day that they attack, we have mutually assured destruction. And so far, America has not attacked China or Russia. Now, we attacked Iraq. We're about to attack Venezuela. We're about to attack Iran. They don't have nuclear weapons. They've got oil. And you'll notice that the Russians haven't attacked the United States of America. I find it hard to believe that the Russians or the Chinese would attack us with nuclear weapons, with our nuclear weapons over here, all things being equal. So why do you need to spend $400 billion a year plus on weaponry? I'll just throw it out for your consideration. What if we took that money and we spent it on something, you know, more intelligent? You know, like maybe education. Not that I'm in favor of spending more money on public education, but my God, it would seem like to me that that would make more sense than spending it on uranium-tipped shells and then firing them around the countryside and poisoning everybody, including the people that are shooting them. You know, American soldiers are shooting these uranium-tipped projectiles. They can be tank shells, or they can be artillery shells, or whatever. But they tip them now with depleted uranium. And God, it just gives everybody that breathes a particle of it cancer. So I don't know, boys and girls, I'll leave it to you. I can't help but say, well, what if? Now, the other side of the coin is, well, what if we took a look at what's going on around us and we took some kind of evasive action? Do you think maybe Americans who want to leave the United States might want to do so now with the full knowledge that the country that you go to is probably going to start hassling you? Maybe instead of going to France or Poland or England, maybe you ought to consider Russia, China, or Mongolia. You'll probably have greater freedom and less hassle there than you're going to have in, oh, say, Detroit, Miami, or Los Angeles. Probably. That's what's being reported. So we have to prepare for the clawback provision, which will be passed by our purchase Congress after the next election. That is, unless we can unseat about 65% of the incumbents in Congress. That's not very likely, boys and girls. Now, it's going to be passed in stealth, just like the Patriot One Act was passed. Probably after the election in November. The remnants of defeat, looking for a payoff on the way out, will vote for anything that they get paid for. You know, that's a dangerous time for America. That's when Patriot Act 3 will probably be passed. And probably with the clawback provision and language that will shut anyone up who tells the truth about what's going on. So we expect that throughout the world, that the new conservatives are going to find Americans. They're going to look them up, find them, and hunt them down, then steal their assets, and then ship them back to the United States for prosecution. And the ruse will be income tax evasion. Tax evasion. Whether it's true or not. That's why Form 4789 has been extended. The net, boys and girls, is closing, and the elitists want to control and eventually confiscate all of your assets, whether they be outside the United States or inside the United States. Well, isn't that just real special? Hang on, let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law our website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the website. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct, to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. Now, most of these authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, remember our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about what if. What if is a part and parcel of our vocabulary. It's a part and parcel of our life and lifestyle here in America. We always kibitz one another and we say, well, what if this or that had happened? I mentioned to you in the last program that General Motors is on the rope. So is Ford. General Motors and Ford both. And it's just a matter of time and they're going belly up. Now, I'm not here to tell you to sell your General Motors stock. I mean, I don't care. I mentioned that I have a student. His daddy is well invested in stocks. I personally, as a businessman, wouldn't own any stocks at this juncture of time. But this man does. He's got his money in stocks. And one of these days, when the market turns turtle, the question will be, well, what if he had sold his stocks before the collapse? Or on the other hand, if the market goes up, then, and he's already sold his stocks, he would say, well, what if I had hung on to my stocks? I had a student here not too long ago. He left New York, sold his house, and moved out here. The going got tough. This isn't the city. And the going got a little tough for him, and so he went back to the city. He's like a dog goes back to his vomit. The Bible has a little story about that. He says he went back like a dog to his vomit. And he was mentioning the price of gold, and at the time he was here, the price of gold was kind of fluctuating in the 400 range. So he bought gold, and then when the price of gold went down and fluctuated, he sold his gold and went back to the city and bought stocks. Now the price of gold has gone up quite a bit. I mean, had he stuck with the program, it's kind of like, you know, if you stick with something long enough, you know, you'll probably get a payday. But he was very concerned about defense stocks. Now, defense stocks always make money. You can't lose with defense stocks. Well, until that defense contractor doesn't get the contract, kind of like Boeing over that new fighter jet. And there comes a point in time when the defense contractors have to merge or they have to go for bankruptcy or close their doors, just like all businesses. Now, in the Bible, there's a statement made. He said, you know, you people trust in your high towers, the word high tower being a euphemism for your military establishment. But he says, I'm going to destroy your military establishment and send you into national captivity. That's what we Americans have to look forward to. Now, it doesn't seem that way today, but then, you know, it didn't seem that way in 470 AD either, when the Roman Empire was reaching the apex, and was actually, they'd already reached their apex about 300, but then they started to decline, and they reached a final conclusion to the Roman Empire about 476 AD. And America began its decline about 1950. And, you know, America's still up and running. I mean, we're not down and out yet. But I don't think that anybody that's looking at our economics or looking at our military, I mean, just take a look at our military. You know, you want to trust in this Hightower? You know where your army is, Americans? They're scattered all over the world. If the Mexicans launched an attack across the Rio Grande River, I don't know what in the hell you Americans would do to stop it. I think Mexico could probably, I don't know for how long, but I think that Mexico could probably attack the United States and pin us down right now today. I'll just bet you. Now, there was a time when we Americans were pretty powerful, but, you know, we've got this all-volunteer army now, and we don't have Americans on board like we used to have them. For instance, right now, over in Iraq, 70% of the soldiers over there aren't happy. 70%. It wasn't but a year ago that, you know, 70% were happy and 30% weren't too happy. 9,000 have now deserted. That doesn't speak well for a mercenary army, you know. Now, there was a time back in the olden days when Elijah, he was out on the lecture circuit, and he was telling people what the problems were in Israel. And the king, his name was Ahab, he came up to Elijah one day, and he said to Elijah, "Are you the man who troubles Israel?" You see, that's what our government is saying about us today. That's what they say about all of the commentators on radio. That we are troubling America. That we shouldn't tell you people about what's going on. You're not supposed to know. And so, as time goes on, and this has been the case in the past, they sucked Daniel in, threw him in a lion's den, took Jeremiah, threw him in a slime pit. Oh, I wouldn't be a bit surprised, but what, the government would come along, arrest me, and throw me in jail? They've done it before. But in the past, those that obey God and keep His commandments come out of lions' dens and slime pits, and their adversaries go into the slime pits and the lions' dens, and they don't come out alive. So I'll throw that out for your consideration. There is a God in heaven, and that guy is a player for keeps. And, you know, he's a nice guy, and he's got a good sense of humor, but he doesn't put up with a whole lot of nonsense. And I'd suggest that we Americans have gotten to the point where we're way beyond nonsense. And I think we're even well embedded in insanity here in this country. What's going on around us is being spoken of by the conservative newsletter writers as just plain insane. That our monetary policy is insane. Our social policy is insane. Our military policy is insane. Boys and girls, there's nothing insane about it. You can rest assured that Dick Cheney and George Bush and all of the people in power, you know, like Condoleezza Rice, all the people in power, they're not doing these things because they're stupid people or because they're ignorant or foolish. The American people are being asked, sum up what you think of George Bush, and they say incompetent. Oh, no. You people have your heads up the wrong ends of your anatomy if you think our president is incompetent. It's just that he's not working for Stanley Tools. George Bush isn't working for Joe Sixpack American. George Bush is working for somebody. It's just that he's not working for you. And the guy he's working for, boys and girls, he is performing flawlessly for. And these policies of destroying America's airline industry, outsourcing our jobs and our industries overseas, and melding America into a one-world government and a one-world currency. The giving away of the Panama Canal, boys and girls, wasn't done by George Bush. It was done by Democrat Jimmy Carter. And one of the kingpins behind it was our senator, our illustrious senator from Idaho, Frank Church. I met Frank one time down at the Roadway Inn. And it was after the Panama Canal giveaway, and Frank Church was our senator, one of them, you know, and he had a town hall meeting or a meeting there, and so while I was there, I asked Mr. Church, I said, why did you vote to give away the Panama Canal when your mail was running 9-1 against it? And here's what Frank told me and everybody else. He said, if you had known what I knew, you would have voted the way I voted. See, that was in the days before I understood politics. I didn't understand the political process here in America. I'd been to public school. I thought that the people were the sovereign masters over their government and that politicians were their servants who were elected to represent them in Washington or Boise or Sacramento. Oh, I had that backwards and upside down. Politicians are our masters. They're not our servants. They're our masters. And just because 90% of the people of Idaho were opposed to giving the Panama Canal away to the Panamanians or anybody else for that matter, doesn't mean that our representative, when we write him a letter, is going to vote the way we, the voters, want him to vote. And that's not the way the game is played. Now, I was talking to a buddy of mine. He was a representative from Pocatello. And I complained to him one time about a vote that was taken in the Transportation Committee. This guy's name was Rusty Barlow. You know, old man Barlow is the one that had the plumbing shop down Pocatello. Well, this is Rusty Barlow. And I said, Rusty. And we're chit-chatting a little bit there in the Capitol. And I complained about the way the Transportation Committee voted after 105 citizens came in to testify against the seatbelt law. And 3 insurance company representatives from San Francisco, not even registered voters in Idaho, just 3 lobbyists from San Francisco representing the National Insurance Institute came up and testified before the committee. 105 citizens said, we don't want it. Not one Idahoan came in and said, we want it. 3 San Francisco lobbyists came in and said, we want the seatbelt law in Idaho, and they reported it out of committee 7-2 in favor. I complained to Rusty. He said, Gordon, you just don't understand politics. And I said, well, Rusty, explain it to me. He said, okay, I'll explain it to you. You see, we Republicans have a majority in both houses of the legislature, but they're not veto-proof. So, we have a $60 million, I think it was $65 million or $67 million education bill. And we want Governor Evans, the Democrat, to sign our education bill. He comes to us and he says, well, he wants a seatbelt law. Because his constituency, that is the insurance companies, want the seatbelt law. So the governor wants the seatbelt law because the insurance companies are going to give a lot of money to the Democrats. And so we made a deal with the Democrats. You see, we said, listen, Governor, you sign our education bill and we'll shut up about your seatbelt law and you can have it. Boys and girls, what the citizenry in the community want is irrelevant and immaterial to what you're going to get. And I don't care whether you're voting for George Bush or John Kerry, or you're voting Republican or Democrat, or for somebody else. There isn't a politician, save for one or two. Now, there might be a couple of them. There's a guy down in Texas, you know, old Paul, you know. Now, he might be voting for his constituency. Hell, he might even have America. His name is Ron Paul. two first names, Ron Paul. Helen Chenoweth was another one. She was very concerned about America. She was concerned about Stanley moving offshore. Yeah, you know, most of these politicians, they don't care. And if you pay attention here, the most dangerous time for America is in the period right after the election. Right after the election. Because here's what's going to happen. Let's assume that you vote out a bunch of people. You citizens out there, you get tired of this crap. And you say, well, I'm going to vote these incumbents out. That means that they're still in office between Election Day and January 20th. Or January the 3rd or 4th, whenever they swear them in. You had a representative named Dick Armey down in Texas. And to show you how this worked, Dick Armey put a rider on a bill which prohibits you, the citizen, if you've been damaged by a pharmaceutical company because of a vaccination. You know, you take your kid in and have them shot up with snake venom and monkey pus, which is pretty standard practice here in America. And the snake venom and monkey pus, for whatever reason, causes an adverse reaction and it kills your kid. And you get mad as hell, you know, you want to sue Merck or Pfizer or somebody. You can't do that anymore. You used to be able to do that. Dick Armey came in and he voted, he put this bill on there, and the House and the Senate voted, and the President, you know, I've forgotten now when this was done. It was President Bush that signed this, about 2002, you know, in the midterm elections. Yeah, and that's a dangerous time, boys and girls. They're gonna stick this Patriot 3. And furthermore, if the polls show that the Republicans aren't going to win, you know, the Republicans are going to lose next November, what makes you think there's going to be an election next November? Just because there's always been an election in November, you think there's going to be one? Now, let me bring you down to earth, as my old granddad used to say. It's time for you to come back down to earth here. Now, remember this illegal alien problem that we're having here in the United States? Boys and girls, illegal aliens have been a problem in this country for 200 years. It's a real big problem now because you got 20 million of them coming in from Mexico, and they're already here, and they're already in place. You have this gigantic fifth column, like you had at Troy. You know, you've already opened the gates. They're already here. They're inside the gates. You've got 7 million Muslims already inside the gates, Americans. And you think that this is just going to go on forever and everything just goes on and on. Well, listen to this. All this illegal alien demonstration crap that you've been listening to here, that you've been watching over the past several days, were well-coordinated, well-planned, and well-funded demonstrations. And they were funded months in advance. Now, who do you think is funding these illegal alien demonstrations? Who tends to benefit from this? They were not spontaneous demonstrations. And we're very concerned that the elitists will subvert these demonstrations. What would be, or that would be, by way of infiltration, and then causing problems that could lead to riots, and then to martial law. Let me tell you a little story here. There was a group, an anti-war group, back in the 1960s. There were lots of anti-war groups. But this particular anti-war group was situated over at Berkeley, California, and it was staffed by a bunch of college professors and students. It wasn't a very big organization. I think they had 149 members. Well, the United States government, this is back in the Nixon years, they decided that this was a bad, bad organization. Just one of hundreds, but, you know, it was a bad one. And they targeted it. They said, we're going to put these guys out of business. Now, here's what they did. So they went and they got three highway patrolmen, these are state policemen now, who came over undercover and joined the group. And they had a bunch of money. See, these college kids and these college professors, they don't have a hell of a lot of money. You know, and they've got a little printing press, and they get on the radio once in a while. And I guess because they had these college professors who could actually think, you know, even left-wingers, you know, can think. And they were anti-war, and they had some pretty good lines. They had some pretty good arguments, and they were a threat. At least President Nixon thought they were a threat. So they infiltrated them, and they came in with money. And listen, when you come into a little organization with $5,000 or $10,000, and you say, hey, look, let me give you $10,000 because I just really love your organization. Now, this is a state highway patrolman. Naturally, he's not in uniform, dummies. He's undercover, see? Probably had long hair and an earring. And he comes and he gives them $10,000. They made him the treasurer of the group. Well, what better person could you have as the treasurer of the group than a guy that gives you $10,000? And they had two other highway patrolmen in there. Now, the other highway patrolmen are going around from member to member and suggesting that they do something that's more dramatic. And so, to get dramatic, they suggested that we get some dynamite and that we set off some dynamite. 149 people in the group. Three people thought that was a good idea. Now, they didn't bring this up at a regular meeting because, you know, somebody would have said, that's stupid, you crazy lunatics. So he went around, you know, behind the scenes, and they're just probing, and this is called entrapment in law. This is a crime that's thought up by the government agents. You see how that works? Government agents. That's their crime. That's their idea. And they persuaded three members out of 149, the three members. Now, where did they get the dynamite? The highway patrolman guys, you know, the undercover agents furnished it and gave them the caps and showed them how to use it, and they put it in this guy's garage, and they went out on the mud flats there in those days before they had any building going us back in the 60s. And they set off, I don't know, 5 sticks of dynamite out on the mud flaps. Bang, you know. Didn't cause any damage. But boy, did it make the newspapers. Oh, my God. These anti-war demonstrators are getting violent now. It threatens the overthrow of the government. President Nixon, you know, gets the FBI, and everybody gets excited. Well, of course, the three FBI guys, they know exactly where these three guys live. And isn't it just a coincidence that the police conducted a raid at the place where the dynamite was being kept? Now, how do you figure that they knew where to go find the dynamite, the explosives? Well, yeah, they're the guys that set it up. Inside job. Now, as a result of that, the government came down and arrested all 149 of these members and charged them with conspiracy that destroyed their group. Now, of course, after lots of litigation goes on, of which the government doesn't care anything about litigation, after all, the victims of the litigation pay for both sides. They pay for their prosecution through taxes, and they pay for their defense through hiring an attorney. And these people, you know, they're not any of them violent. Not even the three guys that set off the dynamite are really violent. They are susceptible to suggestion. Susceptible to suggestion. And that's precisely what's coming up here. These demonstrations that you see going on here, these people are susceptible to, they're foreigners, aliens. Hell, most of them don't even speak English. They're very susceptible to suggestions. So as expected, the demonstrations by illegal aliens and their backers across the country has fueled a growing counter-movement, and it has piqued interest in upcoming civilian border patrol missions. Within 48 hours of the Phoenix and Los Angeles marches by these illegal immigrants, 300 new volunteers for the Minutemen patrols along the borders had been accepted. People are astounded at the demands. They are astounded at the burning of United States flags and the pro-Mexican, anti-American terror of the riots. People didn't realize until the marches that there were 20 million illegal immigrants in America. Calls to talk shows are running 95% against the illegal immigration as well. Now, a backlash is building, and the results could get real nasty. So already, Representatives Tancredo and Sensenbrenner have received numerous death threats for criminalizing illegal aliens, and the polarizing is in process. The next step, boys and girls, is riots, death, and martial law. Now, the war in Iraq was not something that snuck up on everybody overnight, like a thief in the night, described in Matthew 25, where the Messiah says, or Matthew 24, where the Messiah says that his second coming is going to come as a total surprise. Hell, I knew war was coming with Iraq, didn't you? I didn't know what day, that was a government secret. But, you know, first of all, the press, you know, the lapdog press of the establishment, they have to sell this to us. So, right now, we are being sold on illegal immigration is a gigantic threat, and we need to take action. Where in the hell did all these illegals come from? How long have they been here? Hell, they've been here for 20 years. This isn't something that just happened in the last 18 months. Illegal immigration into the United States is the outgrowth of the NAFTA treaty, which has bankrupted Mexico. And those people down there, now that we've bankrupted them, they're desperate, and they need to have some income. And so they're coming to the United States, and our border is open. That's the plan. And then the corporations, you know, like Tyson Chicken Company down here in Arkansas, they hire these guys so that they don't have to pay you $10 or $16 an hour. They pay these guys $5 an hour. Come on, kids, just wake up and get real. Now, we're getting ready for the New World Order. They serve two purposes. Now that there's 20 million of them here and 7 million of these Muslims here, now that you've got this gigantic fifth column in your midst, and your entire military establishment is where? Oh, they're down in Colombia, fighting drugs. They're over in Iraq, trying to make Iraq safe for democracy. They're over in Germany. They're over in Korea. Boys and girls, you Americans, I don't think could defend yourselves against the daughters of the American Revolution. I don't think. Your Panama Canal is in the hands of the People's Republic of China. Did you know that the Hutchison Company is in control of the Panama Canal? And you want to trust in your high towers? You want to trust in your military establishment? You want to buy more Raytheon stock and Lockheed stock? You want to trust in your stock market and your economy that's being supported by $2 billion a day by foreigners? Boys and girls, we're going to look back and say, my God, what if we had voted for somebody else? What if we had obeyed God and kept His commandments? What if? What if? All right, we're about out of time. I'm going to have to cut it off right there. We'll be back with more on what ifs tomorrow night when we return. Keep in mind that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. For more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.